Alexa, what's Universal Time? Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting. Iraq's Prime Minister Haider al-Abadi has demanded the independence referendum held Monday in the autonomous northern Kurdish region be annulled. He has called it unconstitutional. Final results released Wednesday showed nearly 93% voting yes for independence, sparking celebrations like this one in Duhok. Fawaz Majid said he's grateful for the outcome. He said the Kurdish people deserve their own state. Turnout exceeded 72%, with higher turnout in the pro-Kurdish provinces of Erbil and Duhok, less so in Salamania. Prime Minister Abadi insisted that federal authority will be imposed on all of Iraq, including the Kurdish region. He said this isn't a threat, but rather it will be done through constitutional means. The parliament has demanded the prime minister send troops to Kirkuk to take control of vital oil fields. Thousands of South Africans Wednesday marched in cities across the country demanding a fight against corruption.
Zuma must go! Zuma must go! Zuma must go! Zuma must go!
Many were chanting Zuma must go, a reference to the embattled South African president Jacob Zuma, whose administration has been mired by a series of scandals.
Now we are sick and tired of corruption that is taking place in our government. Yeah, it has come to an end. That's my opinion.
The protests were organized by the Congress of South African Trade Unions, which is backing Deputy President Cyril Ramaphosa as the next leader of the ruling African National Congress, voting for that leadership expected in December. This is VOA News. The entire population of 11,000 has been evacuated from an island of the South Pacific archipelago, Vanuatu, where a volcano appears to be coming to life, threatening a major eruption. The evacuation order on Ombe Island is expected to be completed by October 6th. The Mararu Vui volcano is spewing rock and ash over local villages. UN officials are expected to visit Myanmar's volatile Rakhine State Thursday, where a security crackdown has forced hundreds of thousands of Rohingya Muslims to flee to neighboring Bangladesh. A UN spokesman said the trip is being handled by the Myanmar government. Few outsiders have been allowed to visit since Muslim insurgents attacked security forces in late August, prompting a crackdown. The UN Refugee Agency High Commissioner, Filippo Grandi, said the exodus of refugees has slowed.
The flow has declined, although the information we got from various government agencies in Bangladesh was that there are displaced people still inside Myanmar, some of whom may be trying to find their way across the border into Bangladesh.
He said for those who have fled, returning will take time, if it happens at all, if the violence stops. President Donald Trump Wednesday proposed a major tax overhaul, offering to cut business and individual taxes to spur growth.
This is a once-in-a-generation opportunity, and I guess it's probably something I could say that I'm very good at. I've been waiting for this for a long time. We're going to cut taxes for the middle class, make the tax code simpler and more fair for everyday Americans, and we are going to bring back the jobs and wealth that have left our country.
Speaking in Indiana, Mr. Trump said the proposal, which must be turned into legislation in Congress, is pro-growth, pro-jobs, pro-worker, pro-family, and pro-American. For a second day, members of the Ugandan parliament Wednesday engaged in brawls over a controversial effort to change the constitutional age limit to allow long-serving President Yoweri Museveni to seek another term. The 73-year-old Mr. Museveni has been in power since 1986. An Ohio coroner said Wednesday American student Otto Warmbier, imprisoned in North Korea for 17 months, died from a lack of oxygen and blood to the brain. But Dr. Lakshmi Samarko could not definitively say he had been tortured.
The fact that he has anoxic encephalopathy, or brain damage caused by the lack of oxygen to the brain, we don't know what the root cause of that is.
She said the 22-year-old University of Virginia student's death June 19, just days after being returned to the U.S., was due to an unknown injury. Hugh Hefner, founder of Playboy magazine, has died. He was 91. Hefner founded the magazine in 1953 that built a brand that helped define the sexual revolution of the 20th century. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Thursday, September 28th. And here are some of the stories we are covering. Uganda's parliament speaker suspends 25 members ahead amid heated age limit constitutional amendment debate.
The effect of suspension is that you immediately withdraw from the chambers. The suspension means that you will not attend committees. You actually will not enter the presence of this parliament and remain away for the next 3 sittings.
Rebecca Kadaga is the Speaker of Uganda's Parliament. Angola's second president in 38 years vows to fight corruption, but can he? Liberia Senator Prince Johnson clarifies comments about life under a likely George Weah presidency, and South African trade unions march against corruption.
Corruption is not good for our moral fiber as a society, and those who are in government must run clean governance, and this must start with the president, because for us we notice that he has failed to run a clean governance and therefore can no longer be respected to be the president.
Solomon Paila is the Deputy General Secretary of the South African Communist Party. No African country made the top 10 list in the latest World Economic Forum Global Competitiveness Index. And Burundi is set to revise its public procurement law to conform to the East African Community Common Market. Those stories, plus our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The Speaker of Uganda's Parliament has suspended at least 25 members of Parliament who then were detained by security forces at unknown locations. Opposition MPs and those opposed to a constitutional amendment on presidential age limit have vowed not to return to Parliament until their colleagues are released. Mugumi Davis Rakarinch reports from Kampala.
There was scuffle in the Parliament yesterday as the Speaker suspended some members of the Parliament, mainly those opposed to the amendment of the constitution. While suspending members of parliament, Speaker Rebecca Kadaga says it is her responsibility to ensure that civility prevails in the parliament. Kadaga immediately ordered those affected to leave the parliament.
The effect of suspension is that you immediately withdraw from the chambers. The suspension means that you will not attend committees. You actually will not enter the presence of this parliament and remain away for the next 3 sittings. I name the following members. Honorable Leonard Kibule, Mukono County North. Honorable Alan Sewanyana, MP Makindye West. Honorable Kasimante, MP Rubaga Division North. Honorable Kireke Namboze, MP Mukono Municipality. Honorable Sentamu Kyagulanyi, MP Kyadondo East.
The Speaker called for Parliament security personnel to forcefully evict MPs who were immediately roughed up from the Parliament. Wilfred Chiza, the opposition leader of Parliament, says the opposition will boycott the Parliament until their fellow members are released.
We have decided, those of us who believe that the Constitution should be protected, that the safety of Ugandans is a prerequisite of all Ugandans, that we are not going to just continue with business as usual, sit in that chamber when we don't know where our colleagues are.
Jesus says some of the MPs were critically injured by the security operatives. She described the move as an executive coup against the parliament.
An attack on one of us in an attack on all of us. All those who believed, like we did, in the protection, defense, and preservation of the Constitution will not sit in that house until we are sure that our members are safe, secure, and are okay. We swore to protect and defend the Constitution of the Republic of Uganda. We did not swear to protect President Museveni and his children and his wives.
Not long, the controversial move by parliamentarian Rafael Magezi, which seeks to amend the constitution and remove the age cap to stand for the presidency, was tabled. Those opposed to the amendment believe it is meant to allow President Museveni, who has been in power since 1986, to stand for presidency in 2021 yet again. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Rwakalinj in Kampala, Uganda.
Thousands of South African workers marched in several cities Wednesday to protest against corruption and its impact on jobs and governing. The protest was organized by the Congress of South African Trade Unions, COSATU, and the South African Communist Party. COSATU has declared its support for Deputy President Cyril Ramaphosa for the leadership of the ruling African National Congress. Solomon Paila is the Deputy General Secretary of the South African Communist Party. He says corruption is not good for the moral fabric of South Africa and that those in government, including President Jacob Zuma, have failed to clean out corruption and therefore should step down.
As we have witnessed in South Africa, that there's a grouping of people that have penetrated the government and began to control President Zuma to run his executive on his behalf. And out of that, a number of corrupt activities took place, leading to a situation where workers in South Africa began to take serious decisions, including the Federation, asking the president to step down, as well as its allied South African Communist Party also asking the president to step down so that we can deal decisively with this problem of corruption. As we know, that corruption, particularly in developing countries, is a huge impediment to the development of the people. But when there's corruption, all those are diverted to the cronies of the president and his family, in this case, our own President Zuma. And therefore, this march was extremely important. It was the first time since COSATU and the SACP made the call for the president to step down that workers came out on the street to ask for his release.
As you know, this is political season when it comes to South Africa, as there's a movement for who is going to succeed President Jacob Zuma. So can we say that your march was, in a sense, political? And does COSATU or the Communist Party, do you support any of the candidates that are vying to succeed President Zuma?
The march was organized by COSATU with the support of the South African Communist Party. And COSATU has got a formal decision to the extent that they support the deputy president of the ANC to become president of the ANC. The SACP does not have a policy to pronounce, so its policy is that we will await the ANC process to take its course. Whoever the ANC elects is the one that we will work with, although we call for a credible process towards the selection of the incoming leader. And therefore, in general, we want to affirm a leader that will fight against corruption, a leader that will listen to the concerns of the people, a leader that will rejuvenate the economy so that our people can get jobs, young people particularly can have access to develop their skills, to participate in the economy and to make a livelihood for themselves and their families. So we need a leader that is incorruptible by any force, but a leader that will also safeguard our national independence, safeguard our constitution, and respect our democracy and the people of South Africa and be accountable to our nation and to its democratic institutions. And at this moment, President Zuma has dismally failed in this regard.
In your speech, you called for even members of parliament to excuse themselves from work and to support their strike. How successful do you think the march was?
The marches were extremely successful across the country. They were overwhelming outcome. The people came out in the street in their numbers. All our members in cabinet didn't go to cabinet today. They all participated in the march. There's corruption largely that we can control, which is within the state institutions, which we think as a democratic government, we have a responsibility to effectively respond to and to defeat. But of course, we are not leaving out corruption generally in the private sector as well as in society in general. And I think the message that goes out is the fact that corruption is not good for our moral fiber as a society. And those who are in government must run clean governance, and this must start with the president. Because for us, we notice that he has failed to run a clean governance and therefore can no longer be respected to be the president. He should therefore step down.
Solomon Paila is the Deputy General Secretary of the South African Communist Party. He was speaking with me from Johannesburg. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Thursday, September 28th. Daybreak Africa time is 14 minutes past the hour. Angola's second president in 38 years, João Lourenço, took office this week and vowed to fight corruption and inequality in one of the richest but yet poor countries in Africa. But veteran Angolan journalist Mario Alpaivai says the new president might have a difficult time carrying out his promise, since most corruption in Angola is usually done by senior members of the ruling MPLA party. On the other hand, Mario says Angola are welcoming their new leader and his promises with a wait-and-see attitude.
I will say there are a mix of film. On one hand, there are a lot of expectations in a way that people are hoping that the new incumbent president could at least introduce some kind of small reform, some kind of new climate, both on political and economic and social plans. On the other hand, because there have been a lot of surmises about nuclear services, also a number of people are more in a kind of attitude of wait and see.
The new president, João Lourenço, is promising that he will fight corruption, inequality in Angola. Do you think he can carry out that promise?
I think it will be quite difficult because, as everybody knows, most of the people involved in corruption are leading members of the ruling party. So to tackle corruption, the president will need to make not only a lot of noise, but also to change a lot of stones in the, on the table. I don't believe that this happens for one day to another day, because it's something which is so established in the system, not only in the party, in the system, that it will be quite difficult. And you must be aware, the top races on the state, on the government, on the public enterprises are still the same people. And the incumbent president made a commitment, a public one, that he will not change these people soon. So I don't believe it will be easy to change the situation.
Mario, what happened to UNITA now, the leader of UNITA? Is he still going to remain the leader of the opposition party?
Yes. Mr. Isaias Kamakuva, UNITA leader. UNITA is the main opposition party in Angola. He made an announcement several months ago that if UNITA doesn't win the elections, he will resignate. So this Wednesday, in a meeting of the political commission, the main leading body of the party, Mr. Kamakuva reiterates his intentions to resignate in an extraordinary congress that his party is supposed to organize. So he says he will keep his promise and will resignate as soon as the party convokes an extraordinary congress to elect the new president.
Former President José Eduardo dos Santos, there is some indication he still wants to remain the head of the ruling MPLA party. What does that mean?
This is the matter of the problem, because he is still the head of the party, at least until 2020 or more. And because the special practice of the ex-president and the vice-president was approved recently by the National Assembly, which gives some kind of powers to President dos Santos. So most of the observers are saying that we have some kind of two heads of presidents in political terms, not in legal terms.
That's veteran Angolan journalist Mario Alpaiva. He was speaking with me from the capital, Luanda. Senator Prince Johnson of Liberia has clarified a comment attributed to him earlier this week in the local media that a George Weah presidency will bring war to Liberia. Weah is one of the leading candidates in Liberia's October 10th presidential election. Mr. Johnson said what he meant was that a George Weah presidency will be chaotic for Liberians because Weah has no control over his supporters.
I said, if he wants to be president, and he has not become a president yet, yet his men are loose. They are stabbing people with knives, and they carry knives under their clothes in a campaign. And they are fighting different partisans from different parties up and down. If that is what he will do when he becomes president, there will be a problem. Because when you do something to people, for every action, there is a reaction. That's what I'm saying. I think when you become president, we deal with the rule of law and not send people ruthlessly, you know, deal with people. Anyhow, you come to people's house at night, you knock the door and people disappear, as it was in the days of Mr. Taylor or Mr. Doe. We don't want to see that here. We want to see the rule of law take its course.
You think that could happen in a Weah presidency?
Well, when you are taking a journey, whether you will succeed at the end, I will see from the first few steps.
Senator Johnson, let's go to your campaign. How is it going?
My campaign, from the day we started until now, has been characterized by non-violent posture and behavior. We instruct our people to be peaceful, to be more civil. And when we go out to campaign and we see multitude of people, we tell them, look, all of you here, not everyone is supporting us. We know you from different parties, okay? But there is something I know. Every one of you belong to Liberia. Therefore, we will be discussing Liberia. We'll be discussing issues. And the issues we're going to present today are tied to individuals, then we'll bring them on board. So be more civil, because we will bring all the principal political actors before you, including myself, so we can leave you with a decision to make, and that will do.
Senator Johnson, is your past having any negative effect on your campaign process?
I tell you what, I don't know what past will have negative effect. I fought for freedom. America knows it was necessary to get Doe out. Doe went to the Lutheran Church and massacred my people. Doe went to the Greystone compound, where you have the American embassy now, and slaughtered everyone that was there. Doe went to the United Nations headquarters and slaughtered the people that were there. He didn't stop there. Doe also went to Nimba and brought to Monrovia 300 babies from the mother's bosom and dumped them upside down in the mass grave, Dupo Road, inside where the monument is today. So did you want me to sit down and fold my hands and let my people get exterminated? No. We fought for freedom.
That's Senator Prince Johnson of Liberia speaking with Moses Garcia Wood in Monrovia. The World Economic Forum released its 2017-2018 Global Competitiveness Index on Wednesday, and no African country made the top 10 list. Zimbabwe, which is struggling to attract investment, ranks 124th. Gibbs Dube of VOA's Zimbabwe Service reports.
Zimbabwe is 13 ranks shy of being the least competitive country out of the 137 ranked by the World Economic Forum in its 2017-2018 Global Competitive Index out Wednesday. At 124, Zimbabwe's ranking is 2 points lower than last year, but economist Roberto Crotty of the Geneva-based WEF Competitive Research said that should not be mistaken for progress.
Although the rank has gone up 2 places, the performance, if you look at the score, the country's performance is slightly worse than last year, actually. Of course, the rank looks at the relative position, and the score looks at the performance over time.
Crotty said Zimbabwe's business environment has proved challenging to operate in for locals as well as foreign businesses due to the country's monetary and fiscal standing, which have affected overall macroeconomic performance.
For example, the budget deficit is now at 10% and the government debt is 75%, which are affecting substantially the conditions for business to operate in Zimbabwe right now.
The GCI ranking is determined by the performance of 12 pillars, or drivers of competitiveness, that collectively define a country's rating. Among the 12 pillars considered in determining a ranking are institutions, infrastructure, macroeconomic environment, health, goods market efficiency, technological readiness, and innovation. Crotty said in almost every pillar, Zimbabwe is not doing well.
Zimbabwe ranks quite low on many factors. Innovation, of course, but also on education and infrastructure and institutions.
Elaborating on the 12th pillar, innovation, despite Zimbabwe's efforts to be on the cutting edge of innovation, Crotty said it is still lagging behind where it comes to technical capacity, quality of scientific research institutions, availability of scientists and engineers, investment in research and development, and production of patents.
Where we don't see so many performance, Zimbabwe ranks between the 100 and the 130 position across different indicators.
Zimbabwe can improve, said Crotty, if it prioritizes areas such as institutions and infrastructure so as to create a more attractive environment for business and growth. No African country is ranked among the first 10 most competitive economies. Reporting for VOA Zimbabwe Service, I'm Gibbs Dube in Washington.
Burundi is set to revise its public procurement law in a move to conform to the East African Community Common Market Protocol for free movement of services within the region. Moses Javier Rimana reports from Bujumbura.
Burundi and other East African member states signed the East African Common Market Protocol that came into force in 2010. Member states of the East African Community agreed to maintain a liberal stance towards the free movement of all factors of production. This includes free movement of goods, people, labor, services, and capital. The current Burundi law on public procurement, Article 65, indicates when awarding a contract in order to encourage the participation of national companies, preferences are given to the tender in the conformity with the tender submitted by the national tenderer. Zenon Nsananikie is the official in charge of public procurement in Burundi Ministry of Agriculture.
It's not compulsory, it's not, we are not obliged to put that. Even the issue of just for reducing or preference, we try to avoid that because it is just to generate some conflict, some problems. If you are a foreigner, you are a particular if you are from Eastern Africa, normally we do not have to discuss this issue.
The non-discrimination of nationals of the East African member states on grounds of nationality is one of the fundamental principles while implementing the Common Market Protocol. Investors from East African member states hailed the move by the Burundian government to amend the law, but communication is still an impediment. Franco Baraza is a country representative of Safintra, considered among the largest steel roofing companies in Africa.
The reason why the nation will get information very fast, they read these newspapers, which is in French and Kirundi. For us, we take time, like 3 days, when others are saying that they had this bidding in such a project. Then we come over, we either get those news, we give for interpreters, they tell us what they need, then we bid also.
The political crisis that erupted in 2015 is said to have negatively impacted the country on its way in the implementation of the East African Common Market Protocol that resulted to some laws not being harmonized. Denis Nshimirimana, the Secretary General of Burundi Chambers of Commerce, says that there is need of the political will to liberalize the regional market.
Till now, our laws accord, they give favor to nationals. If we open, surely that our citizens will benefit from this open market in terms of prices, which will decrease, and in also terms of quality of the goods.
Burundi authorities say that the procurement law that is under amendment will come into force by next year. Burundi joined the East African Community 10 years ago, but implementing the protocols of the region had been a challenge due to the political violence that erupted in 2015. Moses Havyarimana, VOA Africa, Bujumbura.
Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. The Speaker of Uganda's Parliament on Wednesday suspended at least 25 MPs who then were detained by security forces at unknown locations. Opposition MPs and those opposed to a constitutional amendment on presidential age limit have vowed not to return to Parliament until their colleagues are released. And that's it for this Thursday, September 28th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with our engineer Jimmy Cook, I am James Barton, Washington, wishing you in Africa a very good day.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, an inside look at Startup Africa, a nonprofit Delaware-based organization that supports youth in building business skills that foster financial independence, create jobs, and grow financial economies. A discussion on Startup Africa on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, sports fans. This is Sonny Young of the Sunny Side of Sports.
I love Sunny Side of Sports.
Please join us for a whole half hour of sports talk and news Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC GMT. On the internet, you can like me on Facebook, follow me on Twitter, and read my blog. Visit voaafrica.com and enjoy the show.